welcome you to the Second Court of Appeals this morning. I understand that the attorneys have both checked in and are ready. Before we begin, I want to introduce the panel to you. To my right is Justice Dana Womack. To my left is Justice Mike Wallach. And I'm Chief Justice Bonnie Sutterth. Before we begin the arguments, I'd like the clerk to please call the case.
The court will now call Kenneth C. Hancock, M.D. versus Arthur Rossi. You may please the court, Mr. William Newman to argue for the appellant, Mr. David Jekyll to argue for the appellant.
Thank you. You may begin.
Thank you, and may it please the court. I'm Bill Newman. I'm here for the appellant, Drs. Cloven and Hancock. And this is, of course, an appeal from a denial of a motion to dismiss under Chapter 74. So my argument will probably be brief because there are not that many issues in it. But I think what makes this case interesting and different from a lot of these Chapter 74 cases is that it involves two doctors at the beginning, at the end of a three-week-long process in which the expert contends that Mrs. Rossi bled to death. And so this is a case that involves, in essence, both the forest and the trees. And the forest part is Dr. Hanna opines that the mechanical cause, the reason for the bleeding to death, was that Dr. Hancock, at the beginning, did not remove Mrs. Rossi from her anticoagulant drug that another doctor, a cardiologist, had prescribed for her serious heart disease, and she had a cardiac stent, and she had been on low-dose aspirin and Plavix for some time. What he says about that is, and he quotes an article that's by and for cardiologists, essentially, but says that a consensus of the treating doctors can be useful, which of course is not a standard of care, and that's sort of a problem with a lot of the standard of care opinions regarding Dr. Hancock, is that he's talking about these issues that involve a cardiologist, and he's not a cardiologist. And he doesn't say what difference it would have made to have talked to a cardiologist, because of course he isn't one. He then suggests that that there's evidence of bleeding overnight after the surgery. And of course, they kept her in the hospital, which was appropriate. These are sometimes done as day surgeries, but Dr. Hancock kept Ms. Rossi in the hospital, and Dr. Hanna thinks there's evidence of bleeding overnight because of a dropped hemoglobin and blood pressure. However, the next day, as he says, she's deemed able to go home, has met all of her post-surgical goals, which means that those vital signs have come back to normal, or certainly within the bounds to be sent home. Then we have 2.5 weeks that are unaccounted for in the appellee's responsive brief. They give some information from their petition about ongoing symptoms of bleeding, which of course is not part of the record because it's not part of the report. And the court is obligated to not look outside the four corners of the report in order to find all of the parts that are there. So what we have is a gap of 2.5 weeks when Ms. Rossi comes back to the hospital and into the ER and is there seen by the other doctor, Dr. Cloven, both of whom are appellants. And Dr. Cloven looks at the work that's done on, this is now June 11th, the surgery's on May 24th, on June 11th, and which includes a CT scan, and decides, yes, there is evidence of some post-surgical bleeding, but there's no evidence of ongoing bleeding, and that's in the report, that's in Dr. Hanna's report, that there's no evidence of ongoing bleeding. But they put her in the hospital to watch her, which I take it is appropriate, because there's no criticism of that, and they check her hemoglobin and blood pressure at least 2 times over the next 2 days. The only criticism of Dr. Hancock is, by Dr. Hanna, and Dr. Cloven by Dr. Hanna, is that she should have checked these more often. But they do check at least twice over the next 2 days, find hemoglobin dropping, give Mrs. Rossi blood, and then by the last morning, and he says she was evaluated, which I think that he doesn't explain that, but I think clearly we can read into that her vital signs and hemoglobin have recovered enough to be, again, cleared to send home. In fact, eventually, and this is not in the report, it's not in the appellate record, but just for the court's information, what we'll eventually find out is that, yes, these had recovered and that she was sitting up and feeling okay and had a non-tender abdomen. Not long after that, something happens, and we still don't know what. And I don't know, through the course of this litigation, we may discover what, but we don't really know what happened. Ms. Rossi's condition took a sudden and precipitous turn for the worse. Collapse. They called in, the crash team, and they put in a line for resuscitation. One thing he doesn't tell you is that we will later find out that they pierced the artery when they put in the line. But that's really got everything to do with this report. They eventually are unable to resuscitate her. Dr. Hancock returns, does a second surgery, for which Dr. Hannah is not critical, to try to find out what's going on and try to fix it. And it's just too late. She dies essentially during the operation. I think it's shortly after, but essentially during the operation. And at that point, it is likely that she's bled to death. But the cause is very unclear. We don't know when or why this happened, why the sudden collapse happened. All that is documented in the surgery is a small bleed that's well away from the original surgery site. Dr. Hannah nowhere tells us that small bleed was caused 2.5 weeks later, and indeed he doesn't have any basis for saying so. Nor does he say that small bleed accounts for the sudden collapse and death. We find a lot of blood in her abdomen, which let's say may be the result of resuscitation attempts. We just don't know. We also find clots, which is interesting because we also, on the CT scan 3 days earlier, know that there was no ongoing sign of bleeding. So when I say we talk about the forest, Dr. Hannah says, even though he's not a cardiologist, not a hematologist, not any kind of expert to do with blood or bleeding mechanics, and not a pharmacologist, not an expert on Plavix, says that Plavix, which I think we all know, is used as an anticoagulant. He says it permanently prevents platelets. Well, of course, it didn't permanently prevent platelets, even though she was taking it this whole time, because she had lots of clots. And in fact, that large hematoma they found is a big blood clot when she first came into the hospital. So we know that she was able to form clots. What he doesn't explain then is how Plavix then accounts for enough bleeding going on for 2.5 weeks to have caused death almost 3 weeks later. And I think that that's a big part of the objections to the report, is that he's just not the right expert, or there needed to be a second expert probably to explain those bleeding mechanics and to explain the effects of Plavix, why it's prescribed, what its actual effects are, and what it's going to do over a period of time if there's a small bleed. He comments in his report that this procedure carries a known risk of bleeding, which I'll take for granted. He is a surgeon. I'll take for granted that he knows that. But this is a laparoscopic robotic procedure, and I think we all know the reason why you do that, or one of the big reasons you do, is to minimize bleeding, so you don't have the big open procedure. And Dr. Hancock actually applied the surgical gel that Dr. Hannah describes to inhibit bleeding. So it's difficult to know what exactly Dr. Hancock could have done wrong. But whatever it is he did wrong, in Dr. Hannah's mind, What's left unexplained is the proximate cause. Then we get all the way to the other set of trees at the end. His criticism of Dr. Hanna is that she should have done more checks more often. And we know she did, we know of three because he documents them coming into the emergency room the next day and the day after. And we can fairly read into his report the fourth day as well, before she's sent home, that everything is recovering and improving to the extent that she was well to be released. So the overarching problem with especially Dr. Hancock, but both, is the lack of qualifications to talk about the bleeding mechanics and the prescription medication. The specific issue with Dr. Cloven is that whether or not Dr. Hanna is qualified, she seems to have done essentially what he says she should have done. He just thinks she should have done it more often, and he doesn't explain what she would have seen had she done checks more often. He says, well, she would have seen this continuous decline. Well, they actually documented a decline over those 2 days. I mean, I don't know that more data points in the middle made any difference, and they treated that decline. So I think just on the standard of care stuff, Dr. Hanna's report is plainly insufficient as to Dr. Cloven. On the overarching proximate cause, he's not qualified to give the opinion on proximate cause, and I think that applies most particularly to Dr. Hancock. And just to give the, and the court's familiar with all the law, but there are, we cited a couple of opinions from this court that says, that say that basically, echoing the Supreme Court, that not every doctor is qualified on every topic, and that you have to explain the how and the why, not just give the recitation of the facts that led to the ultimate event, and that was that Estort case where it should have been sent to some other specialist. Well, you have to be qualified to say what those other specialists would have done. And in this case, you have to be qualified to say what the medication that you're saying caused the ultimate effect was doing. And that's just absent here. Actually, I don't think I have anything else. I think I'll stop there unless there are any other questions, and I'll just reserve the rest or reserve my 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Your Honors.
May it please the court. I'm Dave Giocal. I represent the appellee. A couple preliminary matters. This was the second report of Dr. Hanna. The first report was challenged, and Judge Cosby ruled that we needed to do a better report. We did a better report. During the first challenge of the report, not at one time was it ever argued that we should have brought a cardiologist in, or that we should have ever brought in a bleeding expert to describe that. So what we did was we cleaned up the report, had the second report. There was never an argument in the second, complaining about the second report that we didn't meet the things that were objected to the first time. So we're at a bit of a disadvantage because they came up with a new argument about needing a cardiologist after when we didn't have a chance to hire a cardiologist because it wasn't complained of in the first report. So for that reason, I think that argument should fail in this particular case. Second of all, a lot of the defenses in this case seem like, well, they've got some defenses to this lawsuit. I've handled a lot of lawsuits, and very few of them are perfect. Usually, medical malpractice cases, there's always defenses that, you know, we argued that something should have been done, they argued that it was done, or that we argued that you didn't do it enough, and that's part of a lawsuit. So a lot of the defenses, a lot of the arguments here just go to, well, that's something that needs to be decided by a jury, not with respect to a report. A report is the main reason of a report is needed is so that the defendant knows how to defend the case. Well, it's clear from the objections made here that the defendant knows how to defend this case. What's important in this case is Dr. Hanna described a procedure that was done by Dr. Hancock that there was a high risk of bleeding, according to Dr. Hanna. It was a situation where she was not taken off Plavix. After the surgery, she had low hemoglobin, she had a low blood pressure. Dr. Hancock described, based on that, she should not have been discharged. And Dr. Hancock in his report clearly set forth why she should have been kept on Plavix, what they should have done in response, what Dr. Hancock should have done in response to the low hemoglobin and low blood pressure, not have been discharged. And Dr. Hanna specifically said in his report that as a result, she was prematurely discharged with a bleed. He said that in his report. Then 2.5 weeks later, she continued to have the problem. She was admitted with a distended abdomen. She was admitted again with low hemoglobin, and she was admitted again with low blood pressure, the same type problems. Dr. Hanna specifically stated that Dr. Cloven should have then more aggressively checked her hemoglobin, should have done it every 6 to 8 hours, and he described why that should have been done. She should have done more examinations of her abdomen. She still had an abdomen. There have been arguments here that Dr. Hanna did not set forth that the bleed continued the 2.5 weeks. Well, on numerous times in his report, he did state that the bleeding continued. We would just refer to pages 182, 183, 184, and 186 of his report where he said that the bleed was caused by the surgery and she died as a result of the bleed. Now, they also state that Dr. Hanna is not the right person to testify that this bleeding is what caused the death. Again, we would go back to that was never argued in the first challenge to the expert report. And more importantly, we would argue that he is the right person. He's a surgeon. He understands what bleeding is. He understands the risks of bleeding. He understands what's done is if you don't follow up on indications that there is bleeding. I don't know what type of expert needs to show up and talk about the bleeding, but he's the perfect person to do it. He practices the same specialty as the two people he's critical of. We would argue in this particular situation, in his second report, he clearly set forth the terms of the, he clearly met all the elements to the requirements of Chapter 74, and therefore his report, as Judge Cosby ruled, is adequate. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. I think first, if the court goes back and looks at the first objections to the first report, there are objections both to the standard of care opinions for both defendants and to the proximate cause under the qualifications to render the proximate cause opinions. I think that's all that needs to be done to preserve that for going forward. And, that was timely objected to, and so was the second report. And whether or not that required another kind of expert in addition to Dr. Hanna, that's up to the plaintiff. I suppose, or to the appellee here, I suppose that the Dr. Hanna could have proven up, in his report, his qualifications to talk about Plavix and to talk about cardiological issues and to talk about not only that, bleeding caused in a surgery, and again, the only bleed that's ever found is a small bleed well away from the surgery site, but he needed to be able to say not only that the surgery caused that bleed, if that's the one that led to her death, but that was enough blood over time. He offers a lot of opinions about bleeding,
but he's not qualified to give any of those. Because he says, for example, he says that, well, bleeding over time is going to eventually weaken organs. So that's why eventually it just takes a little bit more to push her over. But how much? How much bleeding over time? How much time? He says he offers a sort of a very loose formula of bleeding over time, you know, amount of bleeding over time equals death. We don't know how much bleeding or how much time that takes, and that's the problem with the report. And I think he doesn't spell it out because he's probably not the right expert to do that. And that's not my obligation in the initial objections to tell the appellee that, well, here's what you need to do. I just need to tell him that this is the problem in the report, which we did. As aptly says, yes, there are numerous times in the report where Dr. Hanna says that, you know, the bleeding from the surgery caused the death, but that's the problem. That's the how and the why. That's the explaining not only that the surgery caused some bleed, which of course he doesn't know, but he can offer that opinion. I will concede that he's qualified to offer that opinion, that this surgery can cause a bleed, and that he believes that this one did. But then he's got to explain how that bleed, whatever that was, led to over 2.5 weeks. And he's got to be qualified. And what his opinion as to how that happened is Plavix. And I think in one of the briefs we referred to it as medicine ex machina, and it kind of is. It's that I can't explain that, but Plavix explains it for me. And I don't have to explain Plavix because it's an antiplatelet drug. So, but that's what needed to be explained, and I think that that's throughout. And then just briefly, then we get all the way to the end. Yes, he does say that Dr. Cloven should have checked more often, and that had she checked, she would have found, you know, this declining hemoglobin. She checked enough to see a declining hemoglobin and treated it. Now, what he needed to say is why that treatment was insufficient, not just that she died, but the giving blood, watching her improve as a result of the blood, why he knows there's still enough bleeding going on to cause that ultimate collapse a few hours later. And that's what's missing, and that's flat not there. And in counsel, I understand counsel's complaint that there's defenses and there's problems with the report. When parts of the report are simply missing, it doesn't qualify the report under Chapter 74. And what's missing is the qualifications to render the overarching proximate cause. And what's missing is the tie to the negligence he contends, the breach of standard of care he contends of Dr. Cloven, and the harm. And those two things are absent from the report, and for those reasons, it's not just a defense, it's a deficient report under Chapter 74. And unless the court has any opinions, any questions, that's all I have.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Gentlemen, we appreciate your argument here today. It's been helpful. Your case is submitted, and you're now free to go about your business. Thank you.
Thank you.